You're listening to Talking Hoosier Baseball,
a podcast by fans
from the IUBase.com website.
For anyone wanting more information on the Indiana University baseball program.
We're recording this on Wednesday, May 12th, 2021. I'm Casti Palmer, joined by the master of the RPI, Carl James, and the creator of IUBase.com, Josh Bennett. We do have a pre-recorded appearance from the man who precisely predicted this past weekend, Chris Feeney.
I don't see why we can't take both from Rutgers and take one of them from Nebraska. Why? Because it's the one and the two and the one and the two? Guess what? All one pitches last anyway. So it doesn't matter. Gabe's the best pitcher on his team. You know what I mean? It's just the way he happens to pitch on Sunday. And I know that. And, you know, he'll be ready for Nebraska. So I'll take three. And I'll be upset when it's not four.
On Friday versus Rutgers, the Hoosiers won 8-3, facing Rutkowski again for the second time. He was the pitcher the Hoosiers faced on opening day. And in complete opposite of that game, managed to score two runs in the very first inning. But then there were no runs again in the entire game until the bottom of the fifth, where Rutgers scored on a pair of hits. But IU really blew it open in the eighth, right after Rutkowski left, scoring six runs. They sent a season-high 12 batters to the plate that inning, including two HBPs, four walks, two singles, and one double. The Hoosiers did give up a run in the eighth, but it was too little too late for Rutgers. Eight of nine Hoosier spots in the order reached base, and four different Hoosiers had multi-hit games with Tates, Colopy, Hopkins, and Espelin. Tommy Summer went 6 2/3 innings, giving up five hits, just one earned run, a walk, and six strikeouts. Now on Saturday versus Rutgers, it was much more exciting in the extra innings pitcher's duel, which IU won 5-3 in 11 innings. There was a complete game, no hitter through sixth, which IU broke up in the top of the seventh with two singles and a walk, but left them. Rutgers broke it up with a solo shot in the bottom of the seventh. IU then tied it up in the top of the ninth on a Hopkins two-out single. And after there were just two runs in the regulation nine innings, there were two runs each in the 10th inning. IU scored on a walk, sack bunt, double, single, and an RBI ground out. And Rutgers scored on a walk, two singles, and a double. But a Jordan Fusey two-run home run in the 11th sealed it. Braden Tucker closed it out in the bottom of the 11th. And McCade Brown went seven innings pitch, giving up just that one hit, resulting in the single earned run while striking out 11.
Talking to me about just the release height and the release point, and thought like the breaking ball was exposed earlier. And that was the reason why we were getting some takes on the breaking ball from McCade that normally we wouldn't get. So I made some adjustments, and it obviously showed. I mean, the swings and misses on the breaking ball is the chase, which lifts up the fastball. So we felt like he was in a really good place. I noticed in the first inning, I looked at Justin and said, like, this cat looks different. You guys did a great job. Your work week was really good.
The second half of the day was a little bit more rough for IU versus Nebraska, especially the first four innings of the game, which featured periodic downpours. The Hoosiers gave up two unearned runs in the second, and then gave up two runs, one of them unearned, in the fourth on two errors in an absolute downpour.
You know, the pitchers, when we're kicking the ball around there in that rain game against Nebraska, we looked like the bad news bears there for about 25 minutes. The pitchers, they could have packed it in. They could have said, "Well, this is silly," and thrown a fit, but they didn't. They just kept competing and fighting, and you just find a way to put yourself in a position to win. And
the game promptly went into a rain delay after the inning ended, with Nebraska up 4-1, with that one run being a Cole Barr home run.
The Povich kid was really good. I knew it was going to be good coming into it, but he was better than I anticipated, to be honest with you. The velo was up. The beginning of the fastball in late was really difficult to crossfire look. I mean, he was tough. So
after the rain delay and a pitching change, the Hoosiers promptly scored 4 runs in the 5th on 3 walks, a sac fly, and home run number 2 from Barr. Another error in the 7th led to 1 unearned run, 2 total runs given up by the Hoosiers. But they did manage to tie it up in the 8th with a double and 3 walks. Nebraska did walk it off in the 9th with a walk and 2 singles. And the pitchers gave up just 3 earned runs on 8 hits while striking out 9. And despite the rough defense throughout the game, Grant Richardson had arguably the best catch of the season in the 5th by robbing a home run. And it was the number 9 play on SportsCenter that night. On Sunday versus Nebraska again, after that rough first game versus Nebraska, the Hoosiers went ahead and scored 4 runs in the 1st and just didn't look back the rest of the game. In the 1st, the Hoosiers scored those 4 runs off of 6 singles, but then didn't have a hit again until the 7th inning. And it didn't really matter because Gabe Bierman was Gabe Bierman and went the complete game, giving up just 4 hits, 2 runs, only 1 of them earned, 1 walk to 11 strikeouts.
But you know, watching Gabe pitch on Sunday was like, I mean, just watching a professional. He's got 5 pitches with the 2-seam and the 4. He's throwing a 4-seam fastball, and you're watching a guy throw 5 pitches for a strike in any count, whenever and wherever he wants. You just don't get to see that very often in college baseball.
Final Nebraska Rutgers game was just as crazy as everything else had been. So it was a pretty exciting pod, that's for sure. And while there were some issues, there were also a lot of Hoosier highlights. And for me, I'm going to go with my highlight is going to be those 4 runs in the 1st inning against Nebraska on Sunday. It was just such a tough way to lose the 2nd game Saturday. So for IU to really come in just focused, ready to go, hitting, no hesitation, and just didn't even look back. They cleaned up the defense. Those 4 runs really seemed to set the tone to me for that game. And it was a big win. So that's what I'm going to go with. Josh, how about you? What's your Hoosier highlight?
Thanks, Cass. My Hoosier highlight this week is going to be the win in game 1 on Saturday versus Rutgers. It was an absolute classic. Like you said in the recap, both pitchers were throwing no-hitters through 6. McCade was actually perfect through 6. We get down to the 9th inning, down 1-0, while only giving up 1 hit. Very frustrating. Down to our last out, and Colin comes through to tie it up with a good piece of hitting. Move to the top of the 10th. Jeremy and Grant come through to make it 3-1. Well, Rutgers doesn't go easy either, and ties it up with 2 out of their own, 2 runs on their own with 2 outs in the bottom half. So here we are in the top of the 11th, and Jordan Fusey has an incredible at bat. At one point, fouling off 5 straight pitches before hitting a 2-run bomb to dead center to give the Hoosiers another 2-run lead in extras. And this time they were able to close it out and pick up an extremely hard-fought W. So that's my highlight this week. Carl, what's yours?
Well, for me, given how good IU's pitching has been and has been all season, it is so important for this team to be able to produce runs in multiple scenarios. Unlike the 2019 team, which, you know, produced home runs by hitting bombs all the time. But of course, you can't always count on that. So I'm going to focus on Grant Richardson, who had 3 RBIs this week on outs. He had a RBI groundout in the Friday game against Rutgers in the first inning. In the 10th inning, in that extra inning game that you just talked about, Josh, he had a RBI groundout in that inning, which, given the scoring that happened later, it was important to get it to that point at which Fusey could hit it. And then in the 5th inning, in the second game, although they did lose, he again drove in a run with a sacrifice fly. So Grant Richardson getting it done, not just through hits, battling when he's even in a tough position, putting the bat on the ball, whether it's a ground out, a sack fly, something to drive these runs home. That was 3 runs batted in. That's not a small number. You know, typically you gotta crush a couple home runs to get that done. All right, so now I will hand it over to our recording of Chris, who will discuss high school and pro.
All right, so for some Hoosier highlights, we're going to nominate one specific high school player, and he's made himself known already on this podcast, Carter Matheson. I brought up his name a few weeks ago when he started off real hot in the high school circuit, and he has just continued to be on fire. Just recently broke the Homestead Athletics high school record with his 15th bomb of the season. It's only been 22 games. He has 15 bombs and 42 RBIs. We could be looking at a Mr. Baseball with Carter Matheson, and he is in that class of 2021, the vaunted class that's coming in. So an absolute Hoosier highlight is the way Carter Matheson's been ripping the ball, going deep, bringing some of those homers to the BART come next season. And speaking of homers, we had a 4-night in a row, all right, Hoosier homer. We started off through the minors. We talked about it last week. And now that the minor leagues are pumping, David Welch actually pointed this out, and he's a real good follow on Twitter if you're not following him. That's at DCWELCH_24. He follows a lot of the Hoosier alum. He goes into the games. He's got an amazing jersey collection, too, David does. So check him out if you can. He pointed out to me 4 nights in a row Hoosier hit a home run. It went from Cade Bunnell to Craig Dietolo to Luke Miller, and then finally, which one I really liked, Kyle Schwarber against the Yankees. So that's always a good one for me. Any home run against the Yankees really is a good one for me, to be honest. And seeing him put one in that little porch has me a little nervous with his only 1-year deal in the Nationals, I got to be honest. I really hope Kyle doesn't end up in the Bronx, but I guess you never know. It's really something to point out how the bats have been hitting. A lot of minor league home runs, a lot of highlights we've been seeing. And to see them start off so quick, you know, the minor league guys have been put in a situation they weren't used to with the whole season shut down. And now they're in another, I don't know if a lot of you guys know this, but a lot of the housing is different this year. They're not letting them stay with host parents. They're not letting them go 4-6 into an apartment. You know, it can only be a couple in because of Corona. So that's changing their whole living status, of course. But these guys, they were college ball players, right? They used to it not being fair to begin with 11.7 and all that nonsense. So I guess they just rolled with the punches. And the Hoosier bats have absolutely been a highlight, whether it's been minor league or major league baseball, and even high school with Carter Matheson's hot start for Homestead.
Now we will hand it over to Cass, who will give us a stats rundown for this week.
Thank you, Carl. I wanted to take a look this week at the difference between the difference in the IU offense in 2 different series, with one of those being this past series against Rutgers and Nebraska. So in this series, the Hoosiers hit just 218, which is quite low for what this team's been hitting as a whole. And the crazy thing was, with 2 outs, that actually went down to 105. Which you guys have heard me talk about it a lot. This is a 2-out offense. They thrive batting with 2 outs. So to hit just 105 was kind of bizarre for an entire series. They did strike out 25% of the time, which I'm typically going to be perfectly fine with that, 25%. But the impressive thing was walking 17% of their plate appearances. That hasn't been as typical for the Hoosiers, and a lot of those walks came in important innings, like I mentioned with the eighth inning on Friday against Rutgers. You get four walks in an inning, and that's going to be a run. So that is very important. Now, if you compare that to the Iowa series, pretty close in time and fairly comparable level of competition. In the Iowa series, the Hoosiers hit 361, which is about on par with how this team can perform, especially over recent weeks. And again, this past weekend, it was 218 compared to 361. That two out batting average, 342. They hit almost as well with two outs as they did across the board. Again, compare that to 105 against Rutgers and Nebraska. That's a huge drop, especially again for this team that is so, so strong with two outs. The strikeout rate was pretty comparable, 21% versus Iowa, 25% against Rutgers, Nebraska. Not going to complain about either of those numbers. If we're under 30, I am happy. If we're 25 or less, I am thrilled. So that strikeout rate looks pretty similar, but the walk rate against Iowa, the Hoosiers walked in just 8% of plate appearances, compared to the 17% against Rutgers and Nebraska. And in all honesty, that's the difference. When the Hoosiers are batting north of 350, it doesn't really matter that they're not drawing too many walks, especially if they're not striking out a lot. But if you're hitting 360, the walks aren't as big of a deal. 8% walks, that's about right. You're going to win a lot of games hitting 360 and walking 8% of the time. Against Rutgers and Nebraska, the Hoosiers needed those walks. They needed that 17% to make up for the hits that they just weren't finding in that series. And so that did lead to quite a few runners stranded on base, with the relying so heavily on walks and groundouts and HBPs. But as we saw, it pretty well got the job done. Minus the defensive miscues, on the offensive side, that's a four-game sweep. So it's just very fascinating to watch the Hoosier bats thrive in so many different situations and doing so many different things. If they need the power bats, they've got the power bats. If they need walks and walks and walks, they can do that. And that's an encouraging sign moving forward as we approach postseason time. So that's what I've got this week. Now, Josh, I've heard you've got some Big Ten stat history that you've been looking into.
Yeah, Cass, I can't remember exactly what brought this up. I think it was maybe all the doubles that Colin had been hitting over the last few series, but we were sitting at the BART a few weekends ago and Carl started looking up the IU records for a single season in Big Ten play. Now, at this point, the Hoosiers have played 33 conference games due to the Big Ten's decision to only play intra-conference matchups. And in a normal season, you'd usually play 24 total before the conference tourney. So going into it, I expected a lot of these records would already be broken since they've basically played 50% more games. But much to my surprise, only one of them has been broken. And that was Paul Tate's breaking Josh Lyon's double record of 12 in the 2010 season. Tate's has 16. There are plenty others that will definitely be threatened since the Hoosiers still have 11 games to play. But the fact that only one has and only a few others likely will shows just how incredible some of these past performances were. So two that definitely won't be broken are from Mike Smith's 1992 season, where he batted .472 and slugged .1022. So now, apologies to Tucker Shank on this, because he's batting 1,000 on the season and slugging 2,000, but he only has two plate appearances, so that's not really going to qualify in that. We do have four guys that'll have a chance to top Jared Sabourin's 51 hits in 2008, led by Grant Richardson with 42. So he's nine away from that. Grant and Colin are also chasing the double record with nine each, but doubtful they'll be able to catch Paul even if they get to the 12 that was needed before this season. So Cole Barr needs six home runs to tie Mike Smith's 1992 mark of 14. Mike Smith again in 92. How remarkable was that season for him? Fegley's RBI record of 45 in 2008 is probably safe, with Cole being the closest at 29. One Barr could actually get is Andrew Means' 38 runs scored in 2008. He only needs four to do that. On the pitching side, Gabe and Tommy will have a chance to catch Joey Donato's seven wins in 2014. They each have five, and so they're only two behind and probably have three more starts. So that's one to look for. Jerry Dill's ERA of 0.36 in the 64 season is probably pretty safe. Now, the next two I do expect to be broken, but there's a pretty interesting note here. In 1931, Claren Veller had 83 strikeouts and 64 innings pitched, which are both the records. The Hoosiers played 19 total games that season. So McCade's only six behind on the punchouts, and Tommy only needs six more innings to match that, so I'm pretty sure those are going to fall. And the last one I'll mention is Chris Wilson's seven saves in 1999. Litt is currently sitting at four, so he'll have an opportunity probably to get there if things go right. I know all these don't necessarily mean anything due to the circumstances, and we don't know yet how they will even handle it in the record books, maybe a COVID asterisk, or I don't know what they're going to do, a separate sheet of this year's stats maybe, but it really did open my eyes just to how impressive all of these records are. You're talking a lot more games, and most of them aren't going to fall. So that'll do it for my Big Ten season stats records. So now we'll pass it over to Carl for the Big Ten power rankings this week.
Yes, thank you, Josh. So yeah, Big Ten power rankings, not really a ton has changed with the way the week fell out. You have Indiana number one, Nebraska two, Iowa three, Maryland four, Michigan five, and Ohio State six. Those are the top of the tier. You know, Rutgers is really not close anymore with the power rankings. And Indiana's, still hasn't cracked the top four in RPI yet. I think simply playing this series in Ann Arbor will probably do the trick for that piece. This last stretch is going to balance the strength of schedule. And even with a couple of the missed series, I'm pretty sure the final RPI is going to pretty well match the Big Ten standings for everybody. But again, the reason I do this is to kind of look and predict what's going to happen in the future. Well, we're down to 3 weeks now, and these last 3 weeks are going to determine. And even everybody, all the pundits, the most recent say, hey, there's going to be five Big Ten teams. D1 just said that today. They're going to make the tournament. I don't know what the number is, but almost everyone's in agreement. It's going to match the standings. So the key is, where do these teams finish up in the standings? We did get news that on Tuesday, there will be the Illinois makeup will be played at 3:00 at Bart Kauffman Field. So that's a good piece of news for the Hoosiers. You've heard various analysis about, you know, how many wins is it going to take to win this league. So I'm going to run a little bit of an exercise here. I'm going to include the rest of our panel. I'm going to call out various series in relatively random order. They're all three, at least at the beginning, they're all going to be three game series. And I want you guys to tell me who wins by how many games. Michigan at Nebraska.
2-1. Yep. 2-1 Nebraska.
That's what I was going to say.
Okay. IU at Maryland.
IU sweep.
Ooh. Okay.
There's bad blood there. IU sweep.
That there is.
Josh, Illinois at Iowa.
Iowa 3, I'm sorry.
Okay. Cass, Northwestern at Nebraska.
Nebraska 2-1.
Josh, Michigan State at Ohio State.
2-1 Ohio State.
Cass, Iowa at Northwestern.
Iowa 3.
Josh, Maryland at Michigan.
Oh, man. 2-1 Michigan.
Cass, Purdue at Maryland.
Maryland 2-1.
Josh, Michigan at Nebraska.
Michigan 2-1.
Cass, IU at Michigan.
I'm going to go 2-1 IU.
Okay, Josh, Northwestern at Ohio State.
Ohio State 2-1.
The last three-game series for Cass, Iowa at Michigan State.
Iowa in 3.
All right, and then the oddballs. The IU-Illinois midweek.
IU.
IU.
It's Indiana, Nebraska, Ohio State.
Oh, Indiana, Nebraska, Ohio State.
Yeah.
Okay, wait a minute. Indiana. I'll say Indiana 3-1 and Nebraska 3-1. So that leaves Ohio State 1-3, right?
No, 0-4.
0-4. Okay. Yeah. I'm good with that.
Yeah. Okay. Basically, that's the same way the Rutgers pod came out. It's just you put in Rutgers instead of Ohio State.
Yep. And Feeney will be happy that I picked some sweeps, including one of them featuring IU. I still wanted to say 3-0 on IU Michigan because they can do it.
Who did you guys predict to be the Big Ten champion?
I'm hoping IU.
It seemed like we were pretty strong on Iowa, it seemed like.
Yeah,
you guys, true. You guys predicted Indiana to be the Big Ten champion.
Okay.
3-1, 3-1, 3-0. So going down to a 9-2 down the stretch to finish 32-12. Very aggressive. Yeah. But to make this point, you do have Iowa going 9-0 down the stretch, which if you look at the numbers I put together, and this is my comparison, the numbers I put together when I went and I really dug into this series by series, I have it finishing in a three-way tie between Indiana, Nebraska, and Iowa, all at 30-14. But yes, the thing with Iowa is you don't look at them, but it is not at all inconceivable, as you guys just demonstrated, that Iowa can win 9 straight games. They've got Illinois, Northwestern, Michigan State. We saw this Iowa team. This Iowa team does not swing at pitches out of the zone. Mm-hmm. They're a good, solid, fundamental baseball team. Now, you know, Illinois and Northwestern both have bats. You know, we're not going to have an idea of how badly this COVID break helps or hurts Northwestern. We'll have more of an idea after they play Nebraska this coming weekend. But that can also figured into it. I mean, if they're still reeling from that, they may be an easy cakewalk for anyone that plays them. Now, you know, Michigan State did manage to actually pretty well thump Michigan in their last game, even though it was only the one win. I don't see Michigan State as being a real rollover. So I would, I think the best opportunity probably for Michigan State to lose a game is that, for Iowa to lose a game is in that last one with Michigan State. But you just don't know. But yeah, so as I said, I'm looking at 30-14, 30-14, 30-14. The way you guys rolled it out is completely different for the most part. Well, you still have Iowa at 30-14, but Indiana two games better at 32-12. Then Iowa, then Nebraska at 29-15, then Michigan at 27-17. You guys actually had Indiana beating Michigan by three games, by five games, sorry, by five games. But so, you know, myself, I have a hard time believing that the IU Maryland is going to be a sweep. yes, I'd like to see it. And yes, we've seen it in the past. But I think Maryland has been on the upswing. So I'll dispute that one a little bit. But you know what? No one would have thought Ohio State was going to sweep IU. No one predicted that.
Or Rutgers sweeping Nebraska.
Exactly. So it just, I'm sorry, none of this can be known. And I even if I put together, hey, this is just a straight based on the power rankings, all my power rankings, there was a 3-week period, which most of it driven by those Rutgers series wins that just completely messed with everything that was in the model. And in many cases, part of it's that a lot of these teams are different teams than they were 2 months ago.
Yep.
So, you know, You know, Minnesota wasn't this bad that first weekend.
No.
They weren't very good, but they weren't this bad.
I don't think they've ever been this bad.
Yeah, I don't think probably ever. Definitely not in the in the 30 years that Anderson's had them. This is just, but those are those are examples. It's just the numbers don't tell me a whole lot because the way the games play out can be surprising week after week. And even the pods had gotten to that, they're almost all 2-2-2s going on. And now they're not. You're seeing teams get swept. You're seeing lots of teams with 3-1s. There's just there's a lot out there. Josh, as we mentioned, the first one out of this is Indiana traveling to Michigan. This one's going to have national eyes on it. What do we got, Josh?
Yeah, thanks, Carl. Yeah, Hoosiers head up to Ann Arbor for a 3-game set against the Michigan Wolverines. Michigan is currently sitting in third place in the Big Ten, but only one game back in the standings, with Nebraska a half game between the two of them, us and them. They're 23-12 this season and have a 5-1 record at home. The Wolverines are coming off a 2-1 road series win over their in-state rival, Michigan State. On the pitching side, Michigan features a trio of sophomore starters. Steve Hadjar will get the ball on Friday night. The 6'5 lefty is 3-0 this season and is coming off a career-high 13 strikeout performance last Friday night. He's given up 18 earned runs in his 56 innings of work, with a 2.88 ERA and 80 strikeouts to go with his 19 walks. Saturday, the Hoosiers should face Cameron Weston. Weston is a 6'1 righty coming off a complete game one hitter in which he struck out 9 and at one point retired 20 batters in a row. He's thrown a team-leading 61 innings, is 5-2 on the season, has a 2.93 ERA with 53 strikeouts and 22 walks. Michigan Sunday starter is Jacob Denner. Now, I'm sure you're waiting for me to tell you that he also had a career outing last weekend as well, but he actually was chased in the third. Denner is a 6-foot lefty who's 3-3 on the season with a 4.22 ERA. In his 42 innings this season, he struck out 44 while walking 16. The Wolverine closer is Willie Weiss, a 6'3 junior right-hander. He has the look of a closer with big glasses and long hair. He has a team-leading 16 appearances with a 2.14 ERA and has pitched 21 innings and has over a 3-1 strike-to-walk ratio with 31 Ks versus 9 walks. As a staff, they have a 3.92 ERA, 1.36 whip, and opponents hit just 2.39 against them. Offensively, the Wolverines are led by Benjamin Sims, who's hitting 344 and is only 2 off the team lead with 25 runs batted in. 5 players have 25 or more this season, led by Jimmy Obertop with 27 to go along with his team leading 9 home runs. Michigan has 6 guys batting right at or above 300 and as a team hits 278 while slugging 471. So our pitching staff will definitely have their work cut out for them, but I have faith that Coach Parker will have a pretty good game plan lined up, as always. Obviously, when the schedule came out, this was one that we circled as having a chance to have a big say in who's going to win the conference this season, and we're getting exactly what we expected. It should be a really good test for the Hoosiers. Hopefully, they can stay hot and pick up a big series win on the road. Friday's game is set for a 4 p.m. first pitch. 2 on Saturday, and the finale is scheduled for Sunday at 1. The weather looks great, low 70s for highs all 3 days, no rain in the forecast, so we shouldn't see the shenanigans that we did over in Piscataway last weekend. So it should be a great setting for what should be a great series. One more thing of note, Nebraska will be playing Northwestern at home, so while we still have 2 games head-to-head against them next weekend, the Hoosiers really can't afford a bad weekend and lose too much ground if they have any thoughts of winning back-to-back conference championships. So that'll do it for my preview this week. So now it's time for Chris to hand out this week's hardware.
All right, red belt time. Amazingly, there's only, 3 weekends left to give these things out. It's even hard to believe the season has gone so fast. But for this week, we go 3-1, huge weekend, right? I was mad we didn't get the 4th win. All right, I really thought we should have. You know, I was a little sloppy. I thought maybe we'd steal one there. But again, one of our biggest red belts comes from the game we didn't even win. From the fifth inning, the Tony Butler Award red belt, all right, 70% of the earth is covered with water, and the rest is covered by Grant Richardson. All right, I couldn't believe that play he made. I know I say it every week, but what a robbery, okay? Over the fence, I think half his body was over the fence. All right, maybe the fence isn't one of those 10-foot jobs, but either way, what a grab. Great to see the emotion him after he made the catch coming over the fence. Really impressive catch. Just continues his highlights, right? Just continues what Grant does out in that outfield, covering space, knowing where the wall is, just making grabs. So definitely the defensive red belt goes to Grant. He had some competition, but Grant took the belt. Now, for offensive, I certainly didn't see this one coming. I feel like that's been a real tagline of the season. But late in that game, I didn't see it coming. Fucci with the bomb. 2-2 count, you know, with two strikes. I really didn't expect much at that point. And the guy goes dead central. Huge home run for this team. Huge win for this team. When we go back and we look at the wins that we had to pick up and how we got some of them, Fucci's home run is going to be something that I think is going to stick out. Not that it doesn't already. So definitely the Alex Dickerson red belt goes to Jordan Fucci. Unexpected dead central bomb. Huge win for the Hoosiers. Really made the weekend complete. And then we go to the Joey Donato Award. I feel like I'm always taking the obvious pick, but I'm going to pick who I want, and I'm consistently going to do it. Gabe Bierman's my guy. I know there's other choices from this weekend. But Gabe decided not on my watch again, okay? Complete game. He wouldn't even let the bullpen come out of the bullpen, all right? I think one guy warmed up, possibly. I heard a rumor somebody warmed up during that game. Gabe did it himself, all right? I know he gave up the home run in the ninth, but you know what that was? That was him saying, beat me. I'm staying out here. And Gabe just showed us that the best pitcher on his team pitches on Sundays, and that's just the way it is. Bierman showed up. Another huge win, all right? This weekend's going to come down to it, and I feel like, you know, the crazy times, the doubleheaders, the extra innings, the bullpens. Nah. Gabe's going to take care of business. He's just going to bring this team on his back, which he's done all season. He takes down another red belt for the pitching award. All right, so for this week, we got the Grant Richardson highlight show for the Tony Butler red belt. We got the Gabe Bierman, not on my watch, for the Joey Donato Award. And Jordan Fucci for the Alex Dickerson Award. Big bomb. Made sure we took that game. There's your three red belts for the week.
Okay, so as I covered in my recap, this is a huge series in Ann Arbor. If the Hoosiers come away with a series win, what will they have done well to earn that? Carl, can you get us started?
Yeah. What are they going to do well? They have got to be able to get through. Their batters have got to be able to get through to these starting pitchers that Michigan has. And as you noted, you know, last week, only one of the three struggled. And of course, that guy is left-handed. And Indiana has been up and down hitting left-handed hitters. Coach talked about that today. In some cases, things went relatively well. Actually, I think for the most part, they did relatively well against Rutowski last week. Mm-hmm. Conversely, Povich just made them look silly. So it was only thankful to the rain that they were able to run him, and they're going to have to face him again in the pod. You know, in the middle game, the best pitcher, the reigning Big Ten pitcher of the week. For some reason, I'm never nervous about reigning Big Ten pitchers of the week. I think we have no problem with it. We want to talk about curses. That seems to be a curse. You know, you don't want to get named Big Ten Pitcher of the Week because you're going to get lit up. So I'm somehow very confident that Indiana is going to score plenty of runs on Saturday. Based on nothing but that very silly piece of information there. But again, I think it's the bats. I think the pitching is going to do well enough. Michigan is able to produce runs, but I also think they are susceptible to getting shut down. And I think Indiana's pitching is built to do that. I think Indiana's pitching is built to shut these guys down.
Yeah, I think what you just said, the pitching is going to have to hold their own, and they have all year. But to me, it's going to be defense.
Yep.
Last weekend.
Yep.
15 runs were scored. 9 of them were unearned.
Yep.
Now, hey, I'm good. I understand that physical errors happen, especially at this level. But as long as they're making good decisions and their approach is right, I mean, yeah, I can handle that. But I think to go along with the pitch, I think our pitching is good enough, but our defense can pick us up a little bit and make our margin for error a lot bigger.
Yep. Yep. I was going to say same thing. The defense has to stay tight. The defense was great for 3 out of the 4 games, but it was really bad in one of them. No. And we can handle an error. And our pitchers have shown that for the most part, they can handle an error. But as soon as it's multiple errors in an inning, or they're having some control, like they're walking and there are errors in the same inning, that's when things go south. And I'm willing to even give a little bit on the errors, especially in that 4th inning when it was just an absolute torrential downpour. And it wasn't like just please make sure there's a guy on the base before you throw the ball there.
He was kind of shielded on that one.
But to that point, you know what? There are other guys in the infield.
Yeah.
There needs to be some chatter. There needs to be something to help these guys out. Yeah. There were two situations in which another player could have helped somebody, prevented somebody from making a poor decision.
Well, and just I'm hoping the team's worked on some bunt defense. This week, that the infield's worked on bunt defense, because it seemed like that's where a lot of it was coming from, was fielding the bunts or attempted bunts or whatever. That just seemed to be the biggest problem as far as errors went. So with that cleaned up, IU can sweep. They've got the pitching, and the bats have proven themselves versatile enough to succeed against almost whatever style of pitcher. Bumps here and there, but I think the defense is the make or break. If it's the defense from the first, second, and fourth games, it's a sweep. If the defense from the third game, the first Nebraska game, if that defense shows up, I don't know.
Yeah, as long as they keep up their knack of timely hitting, you know, that also helps your margin of error. It's going to take their best series of the season to pull it out, especially if you're talking sweep. I'm good with 2-1 in this. Just don't lose ground. You've got head-to-heads coming up down the road. You know, just put together a solid series, get out of there with 2 wins, and I think we'll be all right.
Because I'd say if you had to put money right now on how is the Big Ten race gonna be at the end of this, the odds are Nebraska is gonna be on top once the series is done, simply because Nebraska has got 3 with a team that hasn't played in 3 weeks,
and the other two are playing each other.
So barring a sweep one way or another, most likely Nebraska is gonna end up on top, but then IU gets a midweek and the pod with the same Nebraska team.
And at home.
Yes.
Well, that'll do it for this edition of Talking Hoosier Baseball. You can read up on Indiana baseball at iubase.com. You can follow us on Twitter at CUatTheBart and at iubase17. On Instagram, it's iubase. And you can always subscribe to the Talking Hoosier Baseball channel on YouTube, which features these video podcasts, game clips, game day media availabilities, and much more. For Carl James, Chris Feeney, and Josh Bennett, I'm Casty Palmer, and hope to soon see you at the BART.